Have you ever been absolutely certain you were right about something and then found out your own body was lying to you? Not a small thing. Bone-deep certainty. Everything you feel telling you one clear and definite thing, while the instruments in front of you are saying something completely different. That is spatial disorientation. I'm Pattern on Traffic, Pattern on Radio Hangar, and today we're going to walk through exactly how it develops, what it feels like from the seat, and why it has killed pilots who were sharp, current, and experienced enough that it should not have been possible. Before we get into the physiology, a quick word from our friends at AviationSoul.com. They make challenge coins for every step of the aviation journey. First solo private pilot certificate, instrument rating, commercial, real quality coins for milestones that deserve to be marked. Great gift for yourself or any pilot in your life. Check them out at AviationSoul.com. Now, spatial disorientation. Let me set a scene for you. It is early evening. You departed this afternoon in clear conditions, visibility unlimited, horizon sharp enough to cut glass. You are an hour into a 200-mile cross-country in a Cessna 172. You do not have an instrument rating, you do not need one today. Visual flight rules or VFR. All the way about an hour in, something has changed. You could not tell you exactly when it happened. The horizon is not where it was this afternoon. A haze layer has built up, not dramatically. The ground is still visible beneath you, but the sky and the earth have blurred at the edges, and the sun has gone down enough that the light is fading out of the scene in a way that makes everything look flat and featureless. You are looking outside the way you were trained to. You are doing your scan, but here's what you do not realize yet. Your visual references are degrading quietly, without announcing themselves, and your inner ear is about to make a very confident, very wrong case for what the airplane is doing. Here's the physiology, and I think it genuinely helps to understand the mechanism rather than just accepting that the problem exists. Your vestibular system, the balance organs inside your inner ear, they detect motion through fluid-filled semicircular canals. When you enter a turn, the fluid moves. The hair cells register the rotation, and your brain receives the message. You are turning, that response, however, is temporary. If the turn continues at a constant rate for more than about 20 seconds, the fluid inside those canals catches up to the motion. The hair cells stop firing, and your brain, with complete confidence, concludes you are no longer turning. You are wings level, you are not wings level. You are in a sustained bank, and your brain has no idea. This is not a failure of intelligence or attention. This is anatomy. This is how the human vestibular system was built. It was designed to detect the onset of motion and brief changes in direction, not to monitor a constant steady bank. In everyday life on the surface of the Earth, that system works beautifully. In an airplane with no visible horizon, it can kill you. Here is how the scenario continues. You make a correction. You feel what seems like a bank, and you roll the airplane back toward what your body is telling you is wings level. But you were not starting from a banked position in the direction you felt. You were in a sustained turn that your vestibular system had classified as straight and level, so you have rolled away from the turn, and depending on how deep the original bank was, you may now actually be in a bank the other direction. This is called the leans. And if you have ever experienced it, you know the feeling exactly. That persistent, stubborn sensation that you are tilted, even while the attitude indicator is sitting rock solid on the horizon line. Some pilots report it lasting for many minutes. You can see the leans manifest physically. Pilots sitting in the cockpit canted sideways, leaning their whole body toward what their inner ear has told them is down, while the airplane is flying perfectly level. The body trying to reconcile a world that does not make sense to it. The leans are uncomfortable. They are disorienting. They are not immediately lethal. What is immediately lethal is what comes next if you follow your body's instructions into what we call the graveyard spiral. Here is how that sequence develops, because understanding the mechanics is the whole point of scenario-based thinking. If you know the steps, you can recognize the early warning signs. You're in that hazy evening, or that overcast afternoon, or that moment when the horizon has quietly gone away. You enter a gradual bank, shallow enough that you do not feel it start. 20 degrees of bank does not generate much initial sensation, especially in a stable, forgiving airplane. The fluid in your canals barely moves at that rate of entry. 30 seconds go by. The fluid settles. Your vestibular system has classified the turn as straight and level. The airplane, without correction, begins to descend. You are banked. The lift vector is pointing sideways rather than straight up. You are losing altitude, airspeed starts to build. You notice the airspeed indicator creeping up, and you do what feels correct. You pull back on the controls. But here is the lethal physics of the situation. You are still banked. Pulling back in a bank does not raise the nose relative to the horizon. It tightens the turn. The bank steepens, the descent continues, the airspeed keeps climbing. Your altimeter is unwinding rapidly. Your airspeed is approaching or exceeding maneuvering speed. Your vertical speed indicator is pegged, and your body, with absolute conviction, is telling you that you are straight and level, and something else must be causing all of this. Some pilots in this scenario push forward. They feel a pitch-up sensation. They push forward. That is catastrophic. They are not nose high. They are in a steep diving spiral. Pushing forward accelerates the descent and the airspeed beyond any recovery possibility. The airplane enters the full graveyard spiral. A tightening, accelerating, descending turn. At 60 degrees of bank, you are pulling 2G simply to maintain altitude. You are not maintaining altitude. The airframe is loading up past its design limits. The airspeed is reading numbers the airplane was never certified to reach. The ground comes very, very fast. The Federal Aviation Administration, or FAA, reports that spatial disorientation contributes to approximately 15% of all fatal general aviation accidents. The Aircraft Owners and Pilots Association, or AOPA, Air Safety Institute has produced decades of accident research on this, and the pattern in those reports is consistent and sobering. Many of those accidents involve VFR pilots transitioning into instrument meteorological conditions, or IMC, without instrument ratings. Some involve instrument-rated pilots who let their scan break down during a long flight, during high workload, or during conditions that felt manageable until they suddenly were not. Here is something I wish someone had drilled into me early in training. The loss of a visual horizon does not happen all at once. It happens gradually, incrementally, step by step. The ceiling lowers slowly. The haze builds over the course of an hour. The light fades degree by degree. Each individual change feels manageable because each individual change is small, and then you are past your effective visual reference long before you made any conscious decision to enter the clouds. This is precisely why the FAA requires VFR weather minimums. This is why the Airman Certification Standards, or ACS, require private pilot applicants to demonstrate understanding of visual illusions and the effects of spatial disorientation on flight. A lot of students treat the spatial disorientation section of ground school as a box to check memorize. The types. Answer the knowledge test questions correctly. Move on. The examiner is looking for more than rote recall. They want to see that you understand the sequence of events and the decision-making that interrupts it. Let me walk through the other major illusions you need to carry with you, because each one has its own scenario and its own failure mode. The somatographic illusion. This one happens during rapid acceleration, particularly at takeoff. When you accelerate quickly, the forces acting on your body feel very similar to a nose-up pitch attitude. Your brain interprets the acceleration as a climb. Pilots have pushed forward on the controls during a high-powered takeoff roll, or immediately after rotation, believing they were pitching too steeply, when the airplane was in a perfectly normal climb attitude. This is more pronounced in high-performance aircraft, but it can happen in any airplane during a transition to a significantly higher power setting at a critical moment. The false horizon, sloping cloud layers, sloping terrain, or patterns of lights on dark terrain at night can create what looks like a horizon line but is not. Pilots have leveled their wings relative to a sloping cloud edge and found themselves in a bank relative to the actual Earth. Night flight near cities is particularly tricky here. The lights of a metropolitan area spread across a hillside can look from altitude exactly like a horizon. Stars visible through a gap in the clouds can be mistaken for airport lights far below. The visual system is constantly pattern matching, looking for the references it expects to find, and in the absence of a clear real horizon, it will construct a plausible substitute out of whatever is available. The Coriolis illusion. This one develops when you're already in a sustained turn and you move your head to check a chart, to reach for a frequency, to look over your shoulder. That head movement in a rotating environment stimulates the canals in a way that produces a sudden and convincing sense of tumbling in a completely different axis. It can be startling enough to cause abrupt control inputs. This is why in low visibility or instrument conditions, deliberate and slow head movements matter. If you need to look at something, move slowly and intentionally runway. Slope illusions affect your approach, An upsloping runway will make you feel too high on glide path, and the natural response is to descend below it. A downsloping runway makes you feel low, and the natural response is to come in above glide path. Understanding these illusions means you verify your approach against the VASAI, or visual approach slope indicator, the PAPI, or precision approach path indicator, or your global positioning system, or GPS, approach guidance, rather than trusting what the runway looks like through the windscreen. Now let's come back to the decision-making question. Because all of this physiology exists for one reason in a training context, to make you a better, more proactive decision-maker before, during, and after any flight where visual references might become unreliable. When your body and your instruments disagree, you trust the instruments. Every time, without exception or negotiation. I know that sounds simple. The reason it is not simple is that when spatial disorientation takes hold, you are not operating in a calm analytical state. You are managing a flood of contradictory sensory input, you are making control inputs, and your emotional response to the mismatch between what you feel and what you see is competing for the same cognitive resources you need to fly the airplane. The pilots who manage this situation are the ones who have built the instrument scan as a deeply habitual behavior, not something they activate when they are in trouble. A reflex, something they practice every flight in visual conditions in clear daylight, the scan is running before it needs to be running. Here is the unusual attitude recovery sequence you need to understand clearly enough to execute without thinking through the logic from first principles. Look at the attitude indicator and the airspeed indicator simultaneously. If the airspeed is high and the airplane is in a bank, level the wings first, then adjust pitch. Not simultaneously. Level wings, then raise the nose, because pulling back while banked tightens the spiral and loads the airframe toward its structural limits. Wings first, then pitch. If the airspeed is low, you are nose high and approaching a stall. Add power, lower the nose to the horizon, level wings. The sequence matters. In a real unusual attitude, you do not have the time or cognitive margin to work out the logic from scratch. The ACS requires you to demonstrate unusual attitude recovery, and the examiner is watching for the correct sequence executed smoothly and deliberately. Now let's talk about prevention, because that is really the core of scenario-based thinking. The first decision happens before you start the engine. What is the weather doing along your entire route, not just at your departure airport? Are there conditions en route that could compromise your visual references? A haze layer forecast to sit right around your cruise altitude, a setting sun that will be in your windscreen for the last hour of the flight, an overcast that might lower by the time you're crossing unfamiliar terrain. If you are VFR without an instrument rating, you need certainty that you will have effective visual references for the entire flight. Not probability, certainty. The second decision happens en route, and it has a deadline, the time to turn around, or to divert and land, is before your visual reference is gone. Not after, not when the horizon has completely disappeared. Before? The Aeronautical Information Manual, or AIM, in its chapter on aeronautical decision-making, describes the hazardous attitude often called press-on, or what instructors call get-there-itis. The tendency to continue toward a goal despite accumulating evidence that continuing is the wrong call. It affects every kind of pilot. Certificated, instrument-rated, experienced pilots have pressed on into deteriorating conditions and not come back from them. The habit you want to build is making the continue or divert decision early, when conditions are still clearly manageable. Not at the last moment when every option has already been foreclosed. Here is something the AOPA Air Safety Institute emphasizes consistently in their accident analysis work. The VFR into IMC accident sequence almost always contains a documented period during which the pilot recognized that conditions were deteriorating. The critical decision point was not the moment the pilot entered the cloud. It was the earlier moment, often 15 or 20 minutes earlier, when the pilot chose to continue despite visible signs that the horizon was degrading. That is the decision-making failure. And it is reversible, right up until the moment you make the choice to continue past it. For instrument students and instrument-rated pilots listening, I want to be direct. The instrument rating does not make you immune to spatial disorientation. It gives you the training to manage it through a maintained scan. That scan degrades when you do not exercise it. Instrument currency matters. Instrument proficiency, which is different from currency, matters even more. Currency means you have met the regulatory minimums. Proficiency means the scan is actually working when you need it. If you have not flown in instrument conditions in several months, actual IMC is not the moment to find out your scan has eroded. That is what the simulator is for. That is what a safety pilot and view limiting device are for. Let me bring it back to where we started, that hazy evening cross country. An hour into the flight, Horizon soft, sun down, destination still an hour away. What is the decision? You land, now, not in 15 minutes, not at the destination, now, while you can still clearly see to land, while airports are still on the table, while the decision is still yours to make rather than the weather's. The conservative choice always looks like an overreaction from inside the cockpit. It never looks like one from the accident report. The ACS asks you to demonstrate aeronautical decision-making not because it is a box on a checklist. It is because the FAA knows that pilot judgment, not stick and rudder skill, is the variable that determines outcomes when conditions deteriorate. The examiner is looking for a pilot who makes conservative choices before the situation forces them. That is the pilot I want you to be long after the check ride is behind you. Sources for today include the FAA Aeronautical Information Manual, the AOPA Air Safety Institute's Accident Research Library, and the FAA Safety Team's Briefing on Spatial Disorientation, available at faasafety.gov, more at radiohanger.com. I'm Pattern. Trust your instruments more than you trust yourself. See you next time.